A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Back in the day, we used to talk a lot about the St. Pauli sausage train.
Yes.
Is it still there?
I don't know.
I'd love to know.
Julie Hernes leaving.
Well, you know what?
Brian as well. Is he going to take his sausages with him? This is worrying.
I don't think they were ever allowed in the media room.
Yeah.
No.
I was going to do St. Pauli versus Hamburg for At The Match.
Yeah.
Which would have been amazing. It's on Monday. Can you believe that? What a pain.
Will you still do it?
I don't like Mondays.
I tell you what, we talk a lot about James and the Italians and the Italian experience of going to a game. When you go to Germany, it's a nice cold winter's night. Not too cold, but cold. And you've got one of those big Wurst with the little buns in one hand and a beer in the other. And you think, this is what it's all about. What do you make, James, of the deal of the summer that's eventually gone through? Falcao's move to Turkey. No. Mauro Icardi's move eventually from under the yoke, under the dictatorial yoke of those horrible people at Inter, as you would call it, through to the perfectly reasonable and nice people at PSG.
I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, because all summer, the brief from him has been he wanted to stay at Inter at all costs, even if he knew that...
So this is what you said last week. You said part of the reason he's never left before is because he always wanted to stay there.
Yeah.
But the writing was on the wall for him for some time, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the club has been very firm in its line on Mario Icardi, which has been... You are out of our project. And it's something that Marotta, the chief executive, has reiterated. Conte has reiterated. And I think after the first weekend of the season, Icardi's wife and agent, Wanda, she went on her TV program on a Sunday night. And she said that while the people who matter at Inter, they want him to stay. And she meant Steven Zhang, the president. And the next day, Steven Zhang and Marotta went to the training ground, sat down with Icardi and said, no, Zhang feels the same way as the recruitment department, as the coach, you're out. And maybe at that stage it became apparent to Icardi that he didn't have a future at Inter. But it was interesting seeing what he put out on social media in the aftermath of this deal going through. It was arrivederci, not addio. So see you soon. So he left the door open in the sense that he can come back.
Is it a loan or a permanent?
It's a loan. PSG have an option to sign him for €65 million. So ultimately, if he does well, they can say, we want to sign Mario Icardi. We're going to put the money on the table for Mario Icardi. He can have a say as well in saying, this experience has not been good for me. I want to go back to Inter. Maybe circumstances have changed. But I think it's clear that Inter, just how they've gone about their business in the transfer market, they've not just bought one centre forward, they've bought two, if you count Alexis Sanchez as a partner for Icardi.
Is this a bit like when Sander Vesterveld had that really shit game at Bolton and Liverpool went out and bought two goalkeepers?
No,
how,
but
how do you think I got think... on? I'll let you be the judge of that. So when these two cars turn up at the training ground in the minute,
I talked about
they both contain goalkeepers.
I talked about the club's line as it directly relates to Icardi, but indirectly they signed Lukaku and then they took Icardi's number 9 shirt away from him and gave it to the Belgian striker. And then it came to announcing their squad for this season in Serie A, and Icardi was listed on that squad with the number 7 shirt. And then they signed Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah.
And they took away the 7 shirt from Icardi and they gave it to Alexis. So all of these things pointed to Icardi spending a season on the sidelines. And then, of course, in the last week, it was revealed that he had made a legal claim against Inter, filing for $1.5 million in damages. And they said, look, if he gets a move, then they will drop that legal case. And that's what seems to have happened. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing with Icardi, again, is that they have extended his contract at Inter. And this has caused some curiosity on social media.
Just to protect the transfer value, surely.
Precisely, because
he only would have had a year left, wouldn't he?
Exactly. So if he'd had a successful season at Paris Saint-Germain, he would perhaps be in a position where he could come back to Inter, run down his contract, and then maybe go to their rivals, Juventus.
Mm.
Or PSG.
No, they're not interested in free signing.
Or PSG could effectively say he's in the final year of his contract. Let's renegotiate this.
Mm. Andy, one thing that's I think lost, and I've seen a lot of coverage of Icardi in the capacity of doing this job, but also because he's a big player, and that most of the content of that discussion has been around whether he's going to move or not, the fact that he's PNG at Inter or he was, and where he's going to go to. What's being forgotten is that PSG have got a pretty good player here. I mean, if the guy can get back up to speed, get back into form, get match fit, this is a player who has been attracting, over recent years, the very biggest clubs in the world, and for a good reason.
He's one of the very best finishers there is. I mean, you can't get away from that. And people talk about baggage, et cetera, et cetera. I think, on the whole, you look at his time at Inter, and of course there was the fallout with the ultras. There are a few big twist.
To be honest, he's probably on the right side of history.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, he's fallen out with pretty much everyone though, but he's fallen out with the Argentinian national team for quite a long time as well.
Yeah, but there are a few big twists, but I think a lot of what people think about Icardi is perception. A lot of the time at Inter, he gets his head down, he scores goals, he improves as a player the whole time. I think on the whole, despite some pretty big holes in it, I think he's been great for Inter on the whole. You can't get away from that. He's been absolutely terrific. And I think the fact that he's moving now, and you think if he has a good season, 65 million euros is going to look cheap. It is going to look cheap. Mm. And, you know, I can see you hovering over your computer there, no doubt publishing a little meme, Luke, about how it's probably that one where the chef puts something in his pot and it catches fire and he puts his hands up to his face. And you've written some sort of pithy thing about egos and Neymar.
You've got Luke all wrong, Andy.
Adding Icardi to the mix and all the rest of it.
I'm a lover, not a fighter. I don't know where this has come from.
Let's be realistic. You're talking about one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the most high-profile clubs in the world, one of the very best-paying clubs in the world. Of course there are going to be egos. You can't look at signing players thinking, we can only sign guys who've got no ego. It doesn't work like that.
It's part of your job as a manager now to deal with that. Simple as that.
It's part of the club's job to deal with that.
Yeah.
And I think they're future-proofing themselves quite nicely against the fact that the Neymar situation is not going away. He's either going in January or July, whichever way it happens. Edinson Cavani is only got a year left on his contract as things stand.
Well, listen, the news you broke to James Horncastle before we came into this studio, which almost had him off his feet. He was so upset. Tell the listeners now what you told James before we came in.
The MLS is a strong possibility for Cavani. I don't think that's any secret.
James, talk us through your beef.
I think for a player of Cavani's age, going to the final year of his contract, he is a prime target for a Serie A club. And I think he would probably go back to Italy.
So what have you got against
first.
Our American cousins?
What have you got specifically against Inter Miami?
Yeah. Look, I would love to see him go to Miami. I think it would be a great destination for
What have you got against telling the truth?
But shall I tell you what? I think a problem that MLS has is the pitches for old players whose knees might not be what they once were.
Because a lot of them are kind of fake pitches, right?
Travel. You know, if you
Cavani's just going to bring his horse.
You know, I think this is
in many, polo.
You know, you're on a plane all the time. You're in a hotel all the time, much more so than you are if you're playing in one of Europe's top five leagues. In many respects, Japan is a better, more comfortable destination where you can get paid the same, if not more, and you're not traveling all the time. So that's all I've got. I'm not saying I'm against MLS. I'm just flagging up some of the things that have sometimes been made as a case to, you know, players who've gone there, that's the experience of players who've gone there as well.
So how much to go if back I, to? You know, if I was him, I would prefer to stay in Europe. But
the thing that cracks me up with that kind of stuff though as well is that. I'm going to sound like I hate MLS now, and I don't, but with the greatest of respect, Cavani can play in MLS in 5, 6, 7 years' time. He could play in MLS at 36, 37.
I mean,
why go so prematurely?
The amount of goals he would score in that division
is ridiculous.
I think he's pretty big. However, I think you have to look at where he wants to take his life as well as his career. I think you have to look at the fact that he's someone who has got more miles on the clock than an average player for that age because he put so much into the game. Mm. I think you have to look at the accumulation of minor injuries that he's had over the last year and a half, which is not insignificant. It's easy to overlook because Mbappe and Neymar are now the headliners there and not Cavani, despite the fact, you know, he's kept his beak clean. He's been unimpeachable in terms of not just the player he is, but the professional he is for Paris Saint-Germain. You know, he deserves to have marked the history.
He's known
as
a quiet kind of Christian guy, isn't he? Like, he's known as keep living a very healthy lifestyle and the rest of it as well.
Yeah.
What? Why can't you answer that?
Yeah.
I always try and stump you once a week.
He's had an interesting ride in Europe. Let's say that. Anyway, the fact is, in the short term, not in the short term, in the medium term, Paris Saint-Germain are going to have to look at replacing Cavani and Neymar. To have this try-as-you-buy opportunity with a player of the quality of Icardi is not to be sniffed at all.
Yeah, and just to elaborate on Andy's point about this potentially being a bargain for Paris Saint-Germain, Icardi in his current contract with Inter, I think they've just added a year on it, so I think the terms are more or less the same. He has got a bit of a pay rise, amazingly.
Which is unbelievable, right. By the way. But it's not unbelievable when you go to Paris Saint-Germain, is it?
Written into that contract.
No, he was saying the pay rise and the extension to his Inter contract you're talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. A pay rise at Inter.
Yeah.
For not turning up.
Yeah.
But if you're going to get him to extend and do you a favour and protect your investment, he's not going to do it for nothing, is he?
But the written into that contract was a buyout clause of 110 million euro for clubs outside of Italy. So that was the price last summer for Mario Icardi. And I remember when Inter started the season and he scored, what, 4 goals in 6 Champions League games, his first ever Champions League season. The noises started to be made by Wanda Icardi that he needed an extension, that he needed a pay rise, particularly in the year that Ronaldo had come to the league and was earning 30 million a year from Juventus. And so Paris Saint-Germain potentially get a 110 million euro player who Inter thought, damn, that buyout clause is actually cheap.
For almost half the price. Yeah.
So there's that to consider in all of this as well.
One of the best stories of the week, just because it sort of warmed my heart and gave me a big grin, is James, you sent me around a YouTube link to Falcao's arrival at in Istanbul to go to Galatasaray. I think there were 25,000 fans at the airport and he emerged from this private jet with a scarf in the Galatasaray colours saying Falcao on it already. He's had that made in advance. That's been made up.
Good old branded merchandise.
He must have had that made
in outside of the country.
My favourite example.
I'm going to put it out there and say that he didn't have it made.
No.
My favourite example of that was when Roma signed. Do you remember the fullback from Lyon, Michel Bastos?
Yeah,
that was a great introductory.
he was paraded out on the pitch before one of Roma's games at the Stadio Olimpico, and he went underneath the Curva Sud where the ultras stand, and I think a scarf was thrown down to him, and he picked it up, held it up, and it said "Lazio merda." He's still an idol to this day of Romanisti.
I bet he is.
What a first day in the job.
Yeah. I think you guys are forgetting this beauty as well. Darius Vassell turning up in Turkey.
Yes.
Oh, they loved him.
Every time someone signs in Turkey, I'm thinking
also,
of that.
Also, the Palace striker from Norway, he went to, was it Trabzon?
Yeah, Alexander Sørloth.
And he got a hell of a reception as well.
He's played very well so far. Yeah. Very, very well. So, and he could, of course, be having
the Sørloth shotgun.
Exactly. Yeah. He could be having a very productive front two partnership with Daniel Sturridge when Sturridge gets himself sorted and fit, couldn't he?
Yeah.
So we saw, the Falcao reception was amazing. Understandably, because he's one of the most famous strikers, I suppose, of recent years.
And yes,
but are you saying, does it dampen it somewhat because you're essentially saying, well, everyone gets this kind of reception in Turkey?
No, I think the notable thing is not the reception, and of course people are very excited about it. He's someone who's continued to score goals in France and in European competition at a good lick in recent years. I think despite his age, it's clear that they're getting a player who's enjoyed a renaissance in recent years. And you add that to the signings of Nzonzi, Seri, Florin Andone, of course, he's turned up there as well.
He's gone on loan, hasn't he?
And Mario Lemina. Yeah, I think Andone is very, very underrated.
Lemina's a nice interesting one because he's got a lot of ability, Lemina. He's just nowhere near consistent.
When you start a sentence with that player's got a lot of ability, there's always a but coming, isn't there?
Yeah, he has got a lot of ability.
I think the thing with Falcao is not how excited the fans were. I think it's how excited he was. If you look at him arriving, and James pointed this out, didn't you? With his wife was really into it, and his kids, who surely when you're that age, you're thinking, what on earth
Mrs.
is going
Falcao,
on here?
Who I think is a very successful Latin pop artist, she looked like she'd been a Galatasaray ultra for about 10 years. I mean, she clearly doesn't know Turkish, but she knew how to like essentially orchestrate a group of ultras. And she knew what the kind of the flow of the song and when to kind of go for it and not. It was brilliant.
Listen, you've
They've
got
been
respect.
Rehearsing on the flight.
Yeah, you've got respect. You've got to respect a team like that, a couple who are such a team that when they land where they're going, the guy's got the scarf, the woman knows all the songs, everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Aren't they? Everyone's happy. Make a bit of an effort.
I think what you saw there.
I'm talking to you, Gareth Bale.
I think what you saw there is the fact that this move had been lined up for a very long time. And so they'd agreed the contract like weeks or a couple of months before, actually. And he was very, very keen to come. And Monaco initially had said, you can't go because there's no fee. And then they said, we need you. We've got to wait for a replacement. In the end, they ended up getting Ben Yedder, Islam Slimani, Jean-Kevin Augustin was the key. So, in fact, we can talk about chains of transfers, and we'll probably talk about this more in a minute. But I know you wanted to talk about Patrick Schick going to Leipzig. Really, he opened the way, because when Leipzig knew they were getting Schick, they could let Jean-Kevin Augustin go to Monaco, and that opened the door for Falcao.
And so, also, Andy, just to interject here, Monaco, before getting Augustin, they wanted Icardi, and they waited and waited and waited. And he basically didn't move. And that's, again, why I was quite confident last week that Icardi would stay put in the end. So, yeah, this was a big domino kind of effect.
It all links in. I want to quickly ask you, because we planned to just round up all the transfers in this section, but quickly, I was struck when I saw Falcao go to Galatasaray, and we looked at how they eventually won the league last season under some pressure from Başakşehir. They've got, I'm not the expert here, you guys are, but they've got a squad at least of recognisable names who've played at a high level. They've been drawn in quite a difficult Champions League group. But do you see them making an impression on the Champions League this season based on what you've seen?
I think they could ruffle a few feathers.
They've got Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid and Club, how do you pronounce it? Brugge,
yeah. And they'll face one of their former players because they've loaned Mbaye Diagne, as they say over there.
The forward.
Yeah. to Club Brugge.
He played at the weekend, didn't he?
Yeah, they'll face him again immediately, and he'll want to have a little go at them, I should imagine. I think they're looking at that, certainly, and thinking, well, maybe we can inconvenience Real Madrid. Who knows? Because Real Madrid, who are one of the great unknowns of this window, really, because they've spent over 300 million euros. And who's the one player who gets into that team? Eden Hazard, who's injured at the moment.
Injured.
You know, it's something you've talked about before, Luke. So I don't think they're completely bulletproof in the Champions League, which is definitely an issue for them, and is definitely an issue for Zidane. I think if you're Galatasaray, you're at least looking at the fact that you want to hold off Fenerbahce, who've been resurgent in the opening weeks of the Super League.
They finished the season strongly, of course, as well. Caught themselves well out of trouble, didn't they, last
year? Yeah, and they've done some interesting business. Of course, they've got in Max Kruse. They've got in Adil Rami and Luis Gustavo.
The Bosphorus Kruse.
Yeah. Adil Rami's...
giving him a nickname.
Like that. That's good, that. I like that.
Thanks.
Adil Rami...
Fort Boyard Istanbul edition.
Thank you very much. I wanted to say something about that. And his rejection by Pam Randerson. One of the two things he's most known for, even though he's like quite a decorated international football player.
We didn't play in the World Cup, so...
No, but yes, he's captain.
He's still got a medal.
Yeah, he did. So he's got to be known for something. So it's not only about Galatasaray trying to repeat domestically, and they've had a bit of a slow start to the season. They got their first win of the season last week at Kayserispor. So it was an incredible weekend. On the Friday night, they win their first game of the season with a 99th minute winner against a team who's got 8 players. They've got 10.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty Super League, isn't it? And then they've got to hold off Fenerbahce this season. And they will always be looking, I think, especially while Fatih Terim's there, at doing something in the Europa League. If they can't get through this Champions League group, then they've got to be an interesting team in the back end of the Europa League.
Del mejor jugador del planeta. Gol del mejor equipo del mundo. Gol del líder de la liga.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Goal! 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 Goal!
James, I want to come to you about this Inter fan statement. I know you talked quite a lot about Lukaku and the treatment he received at Cagliari, but the story has moved on, hasn't it, through this week with the Inter fans, or ultras, I suppose we should call them, releasing a statement where they sided with, I mean, my interpretation of it, and you perhaps be able to correct me if you need to, they've sided with the ultras movement rather than side with their own player. And I think if we acknowledge that most of the people listening to this will be based in the UK, they'll find this obviously horrendously offensive, as we all do, but they also find it quite odd, because you'd expect ultras to defend their team's players probably to the hilt more than anything else, and we've seen that happen in the past, particularly in this country. There's been occasions where I certainly felt like fans of clubs have defended their players when they didn't need to, when it was a bad look to do so. But this has kind of gone the other way. I wonder if you could chuck a bit of context onto this and let us know what your reading of it is.
Well, they've shown solidarity with the abusers rather than the abused, which I think makes this shocking. But it's sadly very familiar, I think, in Italian football, in that these ultras have decided to defend a movement rather than defend a player. And I think reading that statement, what it says to me, well, it smacks of white privilege and entitlement in how they basically say that we get to decide what's offensive and what's not. And also there's there's a massive contradiction in their reasoning here, which is that, you know, we only say this to get under your skin. It's a show of respect. But if you're acknowledging that it is offensive to make monkey chants against black players, you are also acknowledging that it is racist.
They're basically admitting they're doing it because it offends people.
Exactly.
So then therefore you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute mealy-mouthed nonsense of a reason anyway. The whole thing, when you read the statement, I know it's been translated, but the whole thing's just, it's utterly risible. It's risible.
It is. I would have to say, I think when you get to, I think it's the penultimate paragraph of it, and
welcome, like, Romelu. At the end of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were Romelu Lukaku, the next time I score in front of the Coup de Nord, I would not celebrate in front of the Coup de Nord. I would turn my back on the Coup de Nord, just as they turned their back on him in releasing that statement. Because they are not his supporters. They are not Inter's supporters. They are essentially supporters of hatred and discrimination.
Of a movement they see as being more important than anything else.
Yes. And I believe that that is something worth turning in Lukaku's case, something him worth turning his back on. Because there are ultimately three other sides of that stadium that are rooting for him.
Yeah.
And they are not worthy of his acknowledgement. And, you know, as long as they keep defending this movement, this mindset, then it's deplorable. It's sadly predictable. Like I was asked by an Italian magazine before the start of the season, Undici, it was a Q&A about sort of a season preview essentially, and what my expectations were. And sadly, I one of the things I said that I could expect was racist incidents in stadia, and particularly with Cagliari. I mean, when I saw that Inter were playing Cagliari on match day two, I reasonably expected that one of Inter's black players, be it Kwadwo Asamoah, be it Romelu Lukaku, would be the victim of racist abuse, because that's been the pattern of behaviour that we've seen over a number of years now.
Yeah, Kane, Matuidi,
Eto'o, Muntari. Mm. The list goes on. Do you
expect any sanctions here? I mean, what's got to happen?
Well, I think so. What we've seen in Italy is that clubs that own their own grounds, so we're talking Juventus, Sassuolo, Udinese, they've all invested in these facial recognition cameras.
Really? Okay.
It's just like they have in Turkey when you're on the way into the ground. Right. What they have with the ID card. It's a similar thing, isn't it?
Yeah, which cost, they're expensive, but they cost half what goal line technology takes to right. implement, which, you know, is standard up and down the country, regardless yeah. of whether you're on your own ground right. or not. The issue is that, yes, you can pinpoint the people chanting and where they are, but you can't necessarily hear what they're chanting. So you also need people in those stands to basically feel safe enough to go to a steward and say, so-and-so is making these racist chants, and that will help a prosecution. I think what's encouraging in some respects, because ultimately it's a deplorable situation, is that the league and the Italian Football Federation recognise that they need to commit to a deeper investigation here. That this isn't something that 3 or 4 days of just applying the old rules, that's not good enough.
James, what has changed since Inter get their stadium ban for the Koulibaly thing? And I think a lot of people outside Italy and a lot of people listening to this would say, well, that felt like a step forward for Italian football, especially when San Siro is so iconic and people who know Italian football know atmosphere at home is so important to Inter. That felt like a genuine penalty. How do you get from that to them not doing anything about the stuff at Cagliari in the second half of last season?
Well, ultimately, I think it comes down to, is all the technology in place for you to make prosecutions, identify and throw these people out of the ground?
Right.
I think that remains an issue. That isn't standard and uniform up and down the league. I think it is within certain clubs. And Cagliari have actually, in their statement, which was markedly different to their reaction to the Moise Keane racist incident.
It was still a bit underwhelming.
I felt their statement this time around was they condemned what happened, and they also asked for help in dealing with this problem. That it's something that you know, they can't on their own solve, essentially.
But I felt it wasn't the top line. Basically, with something like that, you need to be saying that what has happened is wrong, and we're going to deal with it. And okay, maybe we need help dealing with it. But elsewhere,
I think they did say that
in the state. Elsewhere in the statement, they said what we won't stand for is people saying it's all Cagliari fans and stuff.
Like, well, the statement
really?
Opens by saying Cagliari Calcio firmly rejects what happened Sunday night at the Sardegna Arena during the game v Inter Milan. The club underlines once again its intention to identify, isolate and ban those ignorant individuals whose shameful actions and behaviours are completely against the values that Cagliari Calcio strongly promotes in all their initiatives every single day. So it's quite a strong opening statement.
Which I think is markedly different from what happened with Keane, when, for example, you had the owner come out and do press afterwards and basically some of the same arguments that Inter's Koulibaly did, which I think goes to show that this is a cultural problem that education is one of the answers to, and that will take a generation, and you know, ultimately that is slow progress, which is not satisfactory for us at this moment, and ultimately we should underline it's under no circumstances satisfactory for black players in Italy to go into work and I think reasonably expect at some stage over a season to be racially abused.
Yeah.
And you saw, I don't know if you saw Demba Ba's tweet.
I was about to ask you, what do you make
because
of Demba Ba's
statement? I think Demba Ba's tweet, in which he basically says he was pleased not to have gone to Italy at the stage in his career where I think that opportunity presented itself because of the problems with racism that come up every season.
So he wrote, here's the reason I decided not to play in Italy when I could. And at this point, I wish all the black players would get out of this league. Surely it won't stop their stupidity and hate, but at least they won't affect other races. So, you know, it's pretty sad times, really. I mean the ultimate situation is the one you touched on there, James, I think, which is that black men are going to work and being racially abused in their place of work.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And I think the wider context to this, Luke, is the atmosphere that we've seen stoked up in Italy as a whole politically over the last few years, with the rise of the Lega and Matteo Salvini. Whilst I was on holiday in Italy over the summer, you know, you leaf through the papers and you see some of the incidents that take place in regular life which don't get international coverage. You know, like young black men, women going clubbing in the summer and being turned away at the door. Mm. What's the reason? The color of their skin. Yeah, I mean, for that to be happening in 2019, as Romelu Lukaku pointed out, is just
so it's a astonishing.
And the thing is, the constituents, the people that the Lega and Salvini appeals to, are more often than not the people in the curve, the ultras. You know, you see, for example, Salvini going to an event for, I think it was the 50th birthday of Milan's Curva Sud, and socializing with one ultra in particular, whose rap sheet is frankly frightening. Mm. You know, and whenever there is a photo opportunity between someone in power and these groups of people, ultimately it endorses them, it emboldens them. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, Lillian Thuram spoke very well about this in Corriere dello Sport this week, that because there is this sense, which I think is wider outside of Italy, you know, when people see these incidents happening in Italian football, the perception that no action is taken, that these people go unprosecuted, ultimately leads these people to think that they can say and sing these things and nothing will happen to them. Can get away with it.
Having said that, it's not just societal context, is it? Because one of the most striking things for me in that inter-fan statement, is the bit that said, well, you know, you've just got to accept that people behave differently in the stadium to how they behave in real life. So, you know, don't take it so personally. For me, that is a huge problem in terms of this sort of behaviour. The idea that you can have far lower standards in the way you behave in the stadium as to how you behave in real life, like leave your decency at the door. Now, I think we've talked about this before, but in France, for example, they had a big advertising campaign a couple of years ago where, you know, you had someone going into a butcher's shop and shouting at the guy behind the counter, and someone shouting at someone else while they were standing next to a bus stop. And it's like, you wouldn't behave like this in real life, so why would you behave like this in the stadium? I think to have that was very effective, to have that, not on its own, of course, but I think to get in a place where it can reinforce this idea where, you know, you can still be passionate and behind your team, but don't forget you're a reasonable person while you're in the stadium.
Yeah, one of the things I'm not trying to draw a parallel because they're different issues, but if you go to different countries and sometimes you'll find that their attitude, and I'll use this as an example because I think it's something that sort of rings true, their attitude towards drink driving, for example, feels like it's about 40 years behind what we have in the UK. And in the UK, I'm obviously not cheapening the stuff that does go on, because that's dreadful, and any person who loses their life or is injured by a drunk driver is a tragedy, of course. But I remember as a kid, there was a huge campaign to make drink driving like taboo, to make it like a big taboo thing. And it was really effective. You go over to the US, for example, their attitudes towards drink driving compared to the UK generally are so lax. It's incredible. It's actually quite shocking to me when I first start to go there regularly. What needs to happen, I think, is some kind of public campaign. I can only really relate to the UK because I don't spend as much time in these other countries as you guys do, where it almost becomes taboo to behave in this way. But what's happening, of course, is people, as you've touched on there in Italy, James, and Andy, you've talked about it before in terms of homophobia in French stadiums more recently. It's going the other way. people are essentially tacitly endorsing, or even not tacitly endorsing, but perhaps dog whistling with this stuff. Cozying up to people, saying it's okay. Oh, these type of characters only say what we're all thinking, you know. And it's actually going the other way. And what needs to happen is a massive increase in public awareness for this stuff to be unacceptable, but for it to change. Because when I was, I said it before on the Ramble on Monday or Friday, one of the two. When I was at the Chequered Trade Trophy between Portsmouth and Sunderland, I was obviously sat amongst Portsmouth fans, but I was sat quite near Sunderland fans. It's not as bad as what we've talked about here. But some of the behaviour generally by the people in that stadium, at Wembley Stadium, it was absolutely shocking to me. And I've been going to football for like 30 years. You know, I was with my wife. There were old people around. There were people climbing over old people to make a point or to swear or to shout or to throw something at an opposite team's fan. Now, it may not have been overtly racist behaviour, but it's pretty bad behaviour. And
yeah,
I think
as long as you've got as long as the same thing, doesn't it?
As long as you've got the idea that you can behave in this way in the stadiums,
exactly.
it gives people a right or feel like they've got a right to do whatever they want.
Well, also, I think now the spaces in which you can behave like that seem like there's more of them than ever in terms of like social media, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I think ultimately, most of the time, what happens in stadium now reflects what happens on social media and vice versa. You know, in that these people feel that they can do and say what they want and they will get away with it. And, you know, it's clearly unacceptable.
Andy, I for the first time, and it shames me because I can't believe I haven't seen this before, I talked quite a lot about Union Berlin and their stadium name and their nickname and everything. First encountered their mascot this weekend.
Really?
Do you know his name? What's his name? Is he called the Iron Man?
Maybe.
He looks like a quite a camp gladiator with a big nose. Have you seen him?
No.
Here, I'll give you show you a picture of him. There he is there. Quite a cool little dude.
Oh, wow, yeah. He's like nice. A knight.
He's a knight. Basically a knight, yeah. I don't know what his nickname is, but maybe people can tell us. You can email in otc@footballramble.com. But the reason I bring this up, of course, is because Union Berlin had their first ever top flight win? Their first ever top flight win against Borussia Dortmund.
Their first home top flight goal as well. I mean, it was something that's absolutely extraordinary. Of course, a lot of people will look at the fact that, as I wrote in my Guardian Bundesliga column this week, a lot of people will look at the story that's already there. The fact that it's a countercultural club. The fact that that Alte Försterei, the stadium, was rebuilt by a legion of their fans because they didn't have any money to do it. The story that on the first day, lots of fans were invited to bring along photos of dead relatives who never lived to see Union in the top flight, and they were blown up by the club into posters that they could show. Well, no, it was exactly the opposite. I think it was like the idea that it was years in the making, and those people deserve to be there as well. And
it's quite touching, I suppose.
It was deeply emotional. The idea that, as we said before, they, despite it being their first game in the top flight ever, when they played Leipzig on the opening weekend, the fact that they didn't make any noise for the first 15 minutes in protest against RB Leipzig and the way they do things and the effect they had on football, very much like other fans have done before. You know, we could talk about the fact that Marius Bülter, who scored the first two goals, and really lovely goals they were as well.
Second one was a lovely finish.
Well, the first one was very Anderton Sheringham corner.
It was actually,
wasn't it?
But the second one, nice rebound comes way out, and he got the composure to just almost like slot
pass it
from
into the corner from about 20 yards.
Yeah.
And Bülter was playing in the fourth tier for Rödinghausen just over a year ago. And those are all great stories, and people love to hear that, and they deserve to be celebrated. To me, the main point about this is a team that is in contention for the title came to Köpenick, where they play, and Union didn't steal this win. Mm. They didn't get everyone behind the ball. They played 4-4-2. They played two up top, and with Anderson and Anthony Ujar, and Anderson scored the third goal. And they showed a willingness, and we've talked about it with other promoted teams, haven't we, in other leagues, the idea that we're going to come up and we're not going to be scared of you. I
so
love
so many teams in Europe are doing that now, aren't they? Our Italian team, very quickly, because I don't want to get away from Union, but our Italian teams who have been promoted doing this as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at Hellas Verona, for example, Lecce and Brescia. I mean, I was struck by...
Is that why Lecce got pumped 4-0?
Well, yeah, Lecce's approach was that they went to San Siro and they tried to take the game to them and had chances. They got into shooting positions, definitely, just didn't take them. And Fabio Liverani, the coach afterwards, Leighton Orient, not legend, let's say.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute opposite of
alumnus.
said that, you know, if we're going to get anything, you know, we can't change our DNA, which is ultimately go against what God's promoted. With the players we've got, we play expansive front foot football.
I just love that this game, and I watched most of it, it's a fantastically German affair. It's being played at a stadium by the old Forester's house. It's being refereed by Dr. Felix Breich. You know, the manager of Union is Urs Fischer, isn't it?
Yes.
The chairman is Dirk Zingler. You know, but to be serious for a moment, Balter played on the left, didn't he? So he basically played up against Lukas Piszczek at right back.
Yeah.
Who had a poor game, really.
Yeah, he did.
But it was fascinating because this guy, who, I'll be totally honest, I'd never heard of him, and he's up against Sancho on the same flank. Sancho, of course, put a goal on and did his usual thing and played well. But I love the fact that it's this guy who steals the headlines.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And like I said, it's a great story and very much deserved. But I think it's very important that here they showed that behind the counterculture, behind the backstory,
there's a bit of substance as well.
We are a team that is serious about playing in this division and we are serious about surviving. And they showed that when they signed Anthony Ujar, when they signed Christian Gentner, when they signed Nevin Subotic, who of course was playing against his former
Subo.
Team.
Subo.
And a lot of people...
There's a good version of Wild Horses.
well, that was the thing, actually.
It's a very British joke.
In the preview to this game, of course, there were, especially in the German newspapers, published lots of pictures of young Hummels and young Subotic together when they were playing for Dortmund. I had completely forgotten that Subotic had cornrows at one point.
Disappointing to see that.
I know, especially from a centre back.
Yeah, it's not what you want.
But
well, he looked like, do you know that southern rapper Riff Raff? Do you look like him? I'll get a picture for you.
Thanks.
Yeah, carry on.
But I think with Subotic, a lot of people thought, even though he's only 30 years old, that he was cooked because, you know, there was that.
Did it look like that? Like Riff Raff, did he?
Yeah, not so much.
No, okay.
That was worth it, wasn't it?
His character, Riff Raff, worth looking up. Very strange chap. Sorry, Andy. I'm doing nothing over here. I just thought I'll have to check it out.
But I think it was always a symptom of how Dortmund struggled to keep the standards that they set in the high times of the Klopp era. The fact that after that back four played in the Champions League final of Piszczek, Hummels, Subotic and Schmelzer, I think it was 2.5 years until that four next played together,
right?
After that, which is an extraordinary story.
Well, should Piszczek even be playing? Should he even be playing at right back still for Dortmund?
I think he was brilliant last season, brilliant last season. Right. And when you bear in mind his age, the fact that he's had to get to a point very much like Ashley Cole did of managing a chronic complaint. And, you know, it takes a while, I think, to work out how to deal with that. They do have Ashraf Hakimi, who's on the second year of a 2-year loan from Real Madrid, who they tend to play at left back and they tend to play when they want to really attack teams. And so maybe that would have been a better option for him to play at right back rather than left back. I don't know, but I think the thing with Subotic is
he's quite right footed, isn't he, Hakimi?
Yeah, but that's fine. That's fine. He's very comfortable at left back as well.
Right.
I think the thing about Subotic is after he got that serious knee injury, he really struggled to get to the previous level. He went out on loan to Cologne for a year, but like his last year or so at Dortmund, he was seen as a last resort if there was nothing else available. So it was a quicker fading of the picture, say, for example, than has happened to Marcel Schmelzer. But he went away to St. Etienne for a year and a half, did okay there. Now he's come back to the Bundesliga. It's interesting. He didn't play in the opening game against Leipzig when they were absolutely belted by a very good team. And Leipzig have proved exactly how good they are by winning all three of their games so far. They won 3-1 at Borussia Mönchengladbach on Friday. And Timo Werner, who's signed that new contract, absolutely on fire. He's
got a hat-trick, isn't he?
Yeah. He looks absolutely incredible.
You found so Timo Werner's, James?
And
yeah.
They look...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very pacey.
He really is.
Yeah.
And they look a genuine title contender. And I flagged them as such before the start of the season.
You did, Andy. That's the only reason you insisted that you made that point today.
Pretty much.
You've got to take the wins where you can.
But I think it was always harsh to judge Union on that first game. A, because Leipzig are very good. And B, because there was so much other stuff going on with like the tribute to the fans that have passed on, with the turning their backs on what Red Bull mean for German football, with playing in the Bundesliga for the first time.
That actually stands for Rasenballsport, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah.
Bit erroneous by you, that, calling them Red Bull. Outrageously disrespectful.
No, Red Bull still run the club. I'm not calling the club Red Bull.
I know.
Anyway.
That'd be good on the wings. Yeah. James, was that worth it?
I think it's been made before, that gag, yeah.
Surprises me that. I'm normally very original.
But, you know.
But I think it's noticeable as well that now they've got that out of the way. Subotić was an unused sub for that first game. Since he's come in, they have looked super solid, and he was really fantastic against Dortmund. To have that little bit of experience...
It's massive.
...to add to what they had before.
Yeah.
But to have Subotić, even if he's playing at 70, 75% of his best ever level, is an enormous plus for them. And of course, you know...
It's a bit like having Luke on a pod.
Oh, big time.
For example.
You haven't got to worry about anything. I'm here. I'm here. Experience. 1,000 episodes I've done. I used to have cornrows as well.
So. But to have a player like that who's played at the very top level is an enormous plus.
For sure.
And,
think they can stand the division?
Yeah, I think they can. I thought they could.
That Hertogen will be big, won't it?
Oh, yeah. That's going to be absolutely
never
enormous.
Played each other in the top flight before, I don't think.
No, they've not, because Union have never been in the top flight before.
Yeah.
So that will be absolutely enormous. And, you know, the Berliner Morgan Post was saying on Sunday, you know, football in Berlin is turned upside down. The world of Berlin football is upside down. Because, of course, Hertha, since getting that point at Bayern on the first day, they've lost their subsequent games and they're looking a little bit shaky under their new coach, Ante Kovac.
What's the name of that newspaper you just mentioned there?
Berliner Morgan Post.
No,
it doesn't sound the same when I say it as opposed to when he says it.
But no country in the world has got better newspaper names than Germany.
I'm just pleased that Andy says it's like it's supposed to be said in this country.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, that's the main thing.
You can't, I mean, don't tell me anywhere in Italy's got a better name of a paper than Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung or Süddeutsche Zeitung or Frankfurter Rundschau. It's just great names for newspapers all over the place.
Yeah.
Gazetta, I suppose. Gazetta della Sport's quite iconic, I suppose.
Gazetta is probably the most iconic newspaper outside of this country that people are familiar with now, I would say.
Yeah.
Certainly in Europe.
I'm talking about names, though. Berliner Morgenpost, come on. It's great.
I mean, there are lots in Italy. There is L'Unità, Unity, which was the left-wing communist one for a long time. Il Manifesto. What else is there? La Repubblica, the Republic.
I'm very fond of Estadio Deportivo, which is in Seville.
Yeah, in Seville.
Because it's like you're in the stadium when you're reading this paper. And it is like that because you read the first 36 pages are about Betis and Sevilla. And then you'll have like half a page on Real Madrid on page 37.
It's amazing to me that there is a newspaper dedicated just to Sevilla and Real Betis.
Amazing if you go there. It's the most natural thing in the world.
L'Echo di Bergamo.
Go on.
The Bergamo Echo.
The Bergamo Echo?
Yeah, there you go.
That's excellent. Have they got an Evening Post as well?
I mean, Corriere della Sera is the Evening Courier, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like the Evening Standard, I suppose. Yeah, I didn't have the guts to to order whilst I was in Singapore. There was beef organ soup or pig organ soup.
Right.
I just wanted them to be specific about which organs were going to be in there. I didn't know. I didn't want to spend my time eating the soup, kind of looking through the broth and trying to recognise what organ I am about to put in my mouth.
Is it a bit like in the UK in the 80s or 90s where, you know, just meat pie is sold at football and you're like, what's the meat? And they're like, oh, it's kind of brown.
Take your chance. Take your chances.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.